Hello, I'm our prof teaching artist, Alex Rowe, and welcome to our live stream. I'm joined today, of course, by Professor Liu and Lauren Welch, another teaching artist. Now, today we're going to explain all you need to know about warm and cool colors. Now, if you want to build healthy studio habits, our prof has everything you need: critiques, tutorials, and professional development. So Claire, why don't you kick us off? Let's cover warm and cool colors.
Yeah, we're going to start with something really basic, which is to ask all of you in the chat and tell us, what images do you guys associate with a cold temperature? Because I do think a lot of this is about association, what we think of when we think about being cold. Now, Lauren, I know you hate being cold because every time you're at my house, you're like huddled in a blanket. So I'm going to guess you would not like the Fortress of Solitude as your hangout space in Superman?
Nope. I am from New Hampshire, but I will always be under 500 layers of blankets and have my room at 85 degrees like it currently is now in my apartment. And I always associate colors that feel cold to me with snow, because I live around the snow. So things that are cold whites or have blues in them or grays in them, these feel very cold to me and I don't like them. The sky outside today was gray and I said, I'm not going outside. It is cold. It is 25 degrees. I looked at the temperature on my phone and it confirmed it was 30 degrees, still very cold.
So I'm guessing, Lauren, you're not going to be one of those artists that does a residency in Antarctica so you can paint live with the penguins. That is not your shtick.
No. I'm more likely to go somewhere like Trinidad or, you know, Southeast China than Antarctica.
I literally apply for that every year. The National Science Foundation, the resident artist in Antarctica, because I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, oh, yes, like anything warmer than 65 and I'm terribly uncomfortable.
So you wouldn't mind hanging out on the planet of Hoth? That would be cool.
No, not at all. Yeah. There's a couple meteors falling, but Luke's going to go check them out. Doesn't seem to be a problem.
So this is a good exercise. If you think about those images, what people are talking about in here, snow, water, LED lighting, and snow, and also sterile environments like hospitals. Just picture what colors you typically associate with those images. And I think for a lot of people, this is the most shallow read possible of the definition of cold colors. It's like blues, whites, grays, greens, purples. That tends to be the most obvious way to interpret. Now, Alex, since you are in what, steaming hot Texas, is it really hot there?
It's not hot, it's just muggy and wet. Awful. I'm sure it's a lovely place.
So ask yourselves now, what images do you associate with warmth in terms of temperature? Because, Lauren, when you're in that cozy, fuzzy blanket all the time, what colors make you feel that?
Well, yellow is my favorite, and red is my other favorite. Anything between red, orange, and yellow is generally considered warm. Now, that's kind of funny, because technically, if you're thinking about stars or flames, blue is actually the hottest thing. But in our general logic of what is a warm color, we tend to stay with those red, orange, yellows.
I just want to give a shout out to Amaris, who earlier, before the stream, and also Ray Mustard, who both gave super chats. You guys, thank you so much for your contribution. When you guys support Art Prof, you're supporting people across the world who cannot pay for an art class. So you're helping us keep us up and running, but you're also allowing other people to have access to art education. Alex, have you seen this film, Like Water for Chocolate?
I want to so bad. You've recommended it to me before, and it's just on my list, and I just haven't sat down and watched it. I might tonight.
beautiful film.
Mm-hmm. All the colors look like I grew up in Arizona in the Southwest, and just those warm, like the Venetian red, the umber colors, like just prevalent everywhere.
So if you guys haven't seen this film, a big part of it takes place in the kitchen. And the theme of it, it's a romance. And so you've got the hot, steamy romance. But also, there's just this warmth to the whole film. Like, you really feel like you're in the kitchen with the family. And so warmth is not just physical warmth. It can also be a sense of emotional warmth. And I think that what we try to identify first is the most shallow read possible of a concept. And then you can actually dig deeper and say, well, listen, maybe it's more than just fire at the Houses of Parliament, and maybe it could be much more. So, Alex, how would you describe the most shallow read of warm colors?
Most shallow read, I would be just like, you think warm temperature, you think heat, you think fire, something comfort, even shelter. It's funny, Neil brought up this great point. I'm a city boy and everything around me is gray. Hey, yeah, Lauren, what do you think about that idea of like, oh, if you're in a space and it's just, oh, I don't see any warm or cool colors, I just see grays?
Well, they're amongst colors themselves, amongst neutrals themselves, are still warm grays and cool grays. And that's getting a little bit more involved. It still involves these associations with, hey, the warm colors, the reds, the oranges, the very warm browns, and the cool colors, the greens, the blues, the purples a little bit more or less. And so basically when you're looking at all the cement around you, you can pick out a warm gray or a cool gray by how greeny it is, or bluey it is, or how brown or orangey it is. I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later, but Clara's got this slide up here that shows more of these comparisons that are a little bit more complicated than just the simple, oh, hey, a warm color is always red, a cool color is always blue.
Well, so this slide, I think, is one of the more obvious ones. Mostly, if you have a blue and you put it next to a brown, usually the blue is going to win in terms of being cool. That's more straightforward. But what about this, Alex? We have got two reds, and we have alizarin crimson on the left, cadmium red on the right. How can you explain the difference in temperature when both colors are red?
This one blew me away, and it just took a long time for me to understand. I was like, so a lizard crimson is cool. Yes. I don't get it. Where it is still a red, and I think it comes up where it's all basis of comparison. But think of it like if you're painting a piece that's primarily blue in color, a lot of cool saturated colors. A lizard crimson will be perfect for that because it will, of course, appear warmer, but it's still technically a cool shade of red, whereas something like cadmium red would be way too punchy. So that is, at least for me, the way that helps me think of it between a cool red and a warm red, of what they're next to.
We have a question from Lisa, who is asking, is sap green cool for a green, or is it more middle of the road green? Lauren, how about you take that? And I'm going to go back to the slide sap green.
I think sap green for me is a warmer green. I associate it closer with the olive color green. When you're getting to more Kelly green or Viridian green, that's tending more to this bluer side. Anything that feels more blue in the green world is going to be the colder green. And anything that tends more brown or yellow, I guess, is going to be the warmer green, because yellow is closer to the reds. I know that's very confusing. It really depends, at least in this very simple way that we're talking about it, on where the colors are on the color wheel and where the warm colors are on the color wheel versus the cold colors are on the color wheel.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird because like a red is still a red and a red is still a warm color. It's just a cooler shade. But we got a good comment from Sketchpaws that's saying, I think warm and cool colors depend mostly on the lighting and less of the color itself. And as far as like drawing from life or plein air painting, like I could not agree with you more on that. Like you could have a bright red wall with cool light, and you might paint that whole thing with a purple. You know, that's entirely based on the lighting and the mood a lot of the time.
Well, some of you guys saw my self-portrait palette knife painting stream recently, and I explained to people in the stream, well, listen, my skin has an olivey tone to it. And so somebody asked later on, they said, well, if your skin is olivey green, why did you make it blue? And I said, because the lighting was blue. And so there was a bluish tint on my olivey skin. And so it does get very complicated. And so really what we're saying, you guys, is that like other parts of color, like saturation and value, it all depends on the grouping of colors. Like you don't ever look at a color in isolation. So how warm or cool is something compared to the color that's sitting next to it?
Yeah, Ermac Unsal, hope I pronounced that right, mentioned that tropical locations come to mind whenever I think of warmth, but ironically, those images actually use more cool colors. And I think that brings up a really interesting point about all this talk that we're having with warmth versus cool. So far, we've talked about it chromatically, where the red is very warm and the blue is very cool, but there is this conversation that I've had with my friend Sonia a lot where actually saturation can define whether something is warm or cool. So in these images here that she's done, the green is considered very, very hot. Like it is the warmest color on the page because it's the most saturated, it's the most contrasted, it stands out. And this is something that seems to occur a lot. I mean, I can't say for sure because I haven't been in a lot of tropical environments, but in, say, the Caribbean or in China, when we were in China, these hot colors where they were very saturated, these greens and these blues felt like they were the warmest colors, whereas the more neutral ones were colder.
Maria says, I know it shouldn't, but it used to boggle my mind when I found cool colors in nature in a warm or hot location. So Alex, this is a lot more than just red is warm. We have to think about it more as a situational thing with colors. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, and when I think of that visual that was brought up in that comment, I think of like living in Arizona where the days are, of course, like blisteringly hot, but it's a dry heat. But at night, it can get bitter cold. But it doesn't snow until this year. It's a desert. It's a sandy desert. So the colors are still warm, but the sense of cold can be there visually, I think, by the colors you use.
Private account says, it's like you can never know the true color of something because of how it all depends on the lighting at any moment. It's not just the lighting, it's everything. It's the lighting, what's next to it, and I think it's subjective. I mean, Lauren, I can imagine that you and I, because we never agree on anything, probably would disagree on what's warm and what's cool. And you know what? I think that's okay. I don't think it has to be so straightforward, and I don't think there's any hard facts about what's warm and cool. It's just your perception of it, and maybe also thinking about how other people might perceive it as well.
Right. I feel like the best way to, so far in the stream, we've given real stupid answers in the sense that we have a color that is isolated as itself and we're labeling it warm or cool just to give you guys a framework to work within. But it's probably easier to start getting the logic of warm and cool colors once we get into actual images or paintings, because then we can start making those contextual evaluations of whether something feels cold or hot. And yes, it is very plastic. It depends on where you're living, what your culture is, what you associate with hot and cold. These things are different per each person.
So Basil's asking, which would be warm or cool? A red orange or yellow orange? A purple blue or green blue? We don't know. We have to see the colors. It's like, again, we can't give you such straightforward answers, which I know is frustrating when you're trying to learn this stuff. But I think it would be a mistake for us to tell you that there is a correct answer because there really is not. So Alex, we have two browns here, burnt sienna and burnt umber. And the shallow read tells you, oh, brown is a warm color. But the thing is, these are quite different. So for you, Alex, which one is warm and which one is cool compared to each other?
So for me, the burnt sienna comes off as warmer. I'm picking up a little bit more, like I'm imagining them mixing in my palate. If I was to mix something similar to burnt umber, I would add a little bit more of like a neutral blue into that to create that kind of coolish grayish yellow, because we can't forget that brown is technically a yellow. These are both warm colors, but you can see how different they are in temperature.
Oh, this is such a crazy one, because I see out of these two, the burnt umber is the cold brown, but I use burnt umber specifically to mix a warm gray, like a French gray, which if I mixed burnt sienna with white, it would make it technically a warm pinkish, brownish, orangish kind of color. It would be warmer than the burnt umber one, but you can use burnt umber to make a warm gray, which is again a contextual thing.
Neil is asking, when buying paints, do you recommend getting both burnt sienna and burnt umber? I mean, we could have 18 streams about this, but my feeling is that it's better to have a smaller palette if you're a total beginner and don't have a lot of experience, and then incrementally add a color here or there. You guys might know that I've been dating Prussian blue, but we had a couple rough dates and I'm not feeling so hot. Although I was like, you know, maybe I was just making all these assumptions. So Prussian blue is still out there, but they're not added to my palette. So you can think about it like that, auditioning for Clara's palette.
I've got like a poster of Prussian blue next to my bed, little kisses, little love. It's funny when you're talking about purchasing new colors for your palette. I feel like this stream is that gateway into it. Because when you're new and starting out, you see the whole slew of colors and you see like 9 different versions of green. You're like, well, which one's green? This is what they're talking about. There are tubes of warm and cool colors on that spectrum.
All right. So Lauren, we have 2 grays here. They don't have names. Which one is cool and which one is warm in your eyes?
Compared to each other, the one on the left to me feels cool. Do you guys agree with me or not? Please tell me why. And then
I agree.
Yay!
I won't tell you why.
Okay, yeah, I want to hear your logic because I bet it's different than mine. The one on the right feels warmer because it has more brown in it, and brown is something compared to gray that I associate as a warm color. The gray is more closer to the snow, shadow of the snow, or storm cloud, or something that makes me think of blue a little bit. But Alex, what is your logic?
Honestly, I couldn't have said it better. Yeah, exactly. That's the same vibe that I get from it.
Sketchpause says, so Clara, basically there's a base color. Then there's like a reflective surface, which is why it depends on everything, like what's next to it and the lighting. Yeah, you guys have to see that there's the color of the object. Like you could say, okay, I have an apple. That apple is red. The color of it is red. But the thing is, if you put that apple next to a cool light, some of the highlights on the apple might actually end up looking very blue. So that's where the actual literal color of the object, not the same thing as how you perceive the color.
We got a comment from Shaim. I hope I'm saying your name right. How does the medium affect the color? And for me, my quick answer is that it only affects it when I'm dealing with mixed media. So like, Lauren, this is kind of like what you were talking about, where that like lime green could be the warmest color. If I'm doing a watercolor painting and then I add acrylic on top of it, then that just, everything goes out of whack.
I was also thinking too, Alex, when I read that comment, of people that work not with pigments, but with light, say a Terrell type person, where the actual mixing of colors is different than mixing with pigments. So, and then also you're dealing with actual hotness of the light, the brightness of the light. And so there are many different ways you can go. We could go down a wormhole, guys. We could do like 20 more streams on this, which I'm totally cool with. But you let us know in the chat if you want us to go into different mediums and hot and cool colors.
Just color prof. It's a new
color
thing.
Prof. Yeah.
Well, so this is a lesson plan that we have available on artprof.org. And if you want to see it, the link is in the video description below. And this is your lesson plan, Lauren, that you designed. Can you tell us how to do the project super briefly and what to get out of it?
Yes, I stole this project from my old professor, Susanna Heller, who had us do white paintings. And basically with a white painting, you want to mix up a bunch of colored whites. When you have a white just on its own, it looks white to you, but it always has a color to it, right? So you want to mix up your warm whites versus your cool whites. I use it in acrylic and have these individual cups. And then when you set up your white still life, you're looking at these warm and cool relationships between the whites. Also these tonal relationships, your darker white versus your lighter white. They're all white, but they all have a color and tonality to them. And what you end up is a white painting, but there's still a hierarchy in it. There's still an image there.
So Alex, what does this movie have to do with painting white? And tell us in the chat, who saw this movie? As Colin Firth and Scarlett Johansson, and it was like watching Pain Peel.
Colin
so
Firth,
boring.
Colin Firth plays Vermeer, and he has a beautiful wig. I watched it in high school in an art history class because it was like the last week of school, and it was like, hey, let's watch a movie that's kind of related. But there's a scene that I can't get out of my head every time I'm painting white, like the exercise Lauren was saying, where Colin Firth Vermeer stands in front of the window to Scarlett Johansson and says, what color are the clouds? And she's like, white. And he's like, no, what color are the clouds? And it's like, in white, there's a whole slew of colors. It's never just white.
Isn't that what Colin Firth taught you?
Yeah, like I hate how it's just permanently in my brain, but it's like, yeah, that is how I think of painting white.
And really, you guys, I do think some of color has to do with your mindset. Because one thing that you said in our acrylic painting tutorial, Alex, that I always think about is you said, don't look at something and say, that's white, I'm going to paint it white. Because once you make that assumption in your head that white is one color, that becomes a limitation. And so that's why it's important that I think you guys do exercises like the white on white paintings, because it forces you to see those changes that you may not see in something that's a lot more diverse in terms of color. So let's take a look at some of these other artists so we can start to maybe contextualize some of the colors a little bit more. So Lauren, taking a look at these illustrations by Yoshi Yoshitani, how would you say this artist is using warm and cool?
I feel like overall the color palette, the colors in and of themselves are very cool. They have an acidy color to them. What makes me think that is especially rooted in some of these greens and blues, which have a more, I'm going to call it a phthalo-ish tropical quality to them. I always associate phthalo with the more colder acidy blue as opposed to ultramarine, which is very purple. Or Prussian blue, I think, is also a cold blue that I see some in here. And also the red, too, I think is tending towards a darker, cooler alizarin towards the bottom here. I think that, so even though there are reds and yellows in here, they are also falling under this hierarchy that's set up by these cool blues.
So Alex, you chose this artist. Can you tell us how you feel about the way they use temperature and color?
Yeah, Yoshi's work has been one of my favorites for a long time. And yeah, like those cards were, Neil was asking if they were from a tarot deck that she recently worked on and published. And they're so phenomenal, I think, because for me, her work was first shown to me when I was in school and saying that I was like afraid of using color. And her work was shows an example of like, no, color is something you can play with and enjoy. And especially when looking at warms and cools, as Lauren was saying, these are such a good example of, okay, like take this piece. It's primarily warm colors like oranges and reds, but they're a little bit on the cool side. They're a little muted, acidic, as you said. And it's just such a good way to play with that.
Elisate says, I tried to draw a semi-transparent daffodil yesterday with colored pencils and had to absolutely give up because I didn't have any grays. It was actually all grays. White feels way above my skill level. Well, Lauren, do you have any advice for people who feel overwhelmed by all the possibilities? Because sometimes I feel bad that we give you guys really conflicting advice that doesn't give a true answer. And so how do you balance that, Lauren?
You know what? It is very hard. It's hard for me. And that's why I give it, because it's very uncomfortable and it's not how we think. But I think maybe some comfort in that and some magic in that is that when you're making your whites and they're all just kind of some tint of some other color, like you're mixing alizarin with white and it makes this very light pink color, and you're also mixing yellow with white and it makes a very light yellowy white color, suddenly you're just working with a whole range of colors again. It becomes, your eyes get used to it, it becomes normal. And then when it's normalized, when you're looking at it and you're seeing all these colors, suddenly you're able to start seeing the colors in this white still life that you're working on. And you're not going to get it the first painting. I didn't get the first painting. It's fine. But it becomes a logic that you understand over time. And the cool thing about it is not only will it apply to just your white things, but suddenly you'll have this ability to acclimate to any strange palette, any neutral palette, any really dark palette, because it's the same skill that's being used in evaluating color.
Well, now we have some 3D pieces that really deal with light, because Lewis Comfort Tiffany, who designed these stained glass windows, these glass objects, I mean, these are all about light. They don't function very well if there's no light. So, Alex, how would you describe the way these function, being these glass pieces?
It's really cool looking at these and how the warm light of the sun coming through plays with even the cooler colors incorporated into the glass. Like, see how even the coolest color on here, like the mountains or the purple flowers, is warm if you were to isolate it out and put it back into another piece. Like, there's an overarching warmth to this piece from all of the colors, and at the same time, a kind of mutedness to it. It's all almost like, if you think of, like, there's neutral, warm, and then cool, these would all be on like the warmer side of neutral. They're muted, but they're all still warm.
Pat Mayer says, I was taught that cool colors tend to recede while warm colors seem to come forward. Help sometimes. I think it depends. It really is situational, all the stuff. I mean, I'll tell you, I always feel bad because 99% of the time when you guys ask us questions, we say, it depends. But it does. Like, you can't ever really say, oh, when you have this situation, that's the answer. It doesn't work that way, because this piece is like all warm colors. There's not a lot of stereotypical cool colors, but it doesn't feel that warm to me. I don't know. What do you think, Lauren?
Yeah, it still is using maybe some of the, it's using some muted colors, first of all, which sometimes don't feel super hot. And with light shining through it, now we're taking into account, okay, well, you've got light now. The areas that aren't feeling very lit up are not going to feel very hot. So there's that added element to it. I think just a good logic overall for this idea, too, of things that say recede versus come forward might more have to do with a hierarchy of contrast rather than a hierarchy of colors in and of themselves. If you have, say, a totally warm palette and then these cool areas in between it, those cool areas are going to maybe come forward because they're the only things that are cool in the entire palette. Whereas, you know, vice versa, those warm things are going to pop out.
Shaim says, I tend to be very sheepish when it comes to introducing bolder colors. Could you give some advice about doing it? Alex, why don't you give them some advice?
Yeah, the advice that was directly given to me that helped is make your underpainting a big, bold color. Like, once I started to make my underpaintings like a bright pink, like that was it. That was my base. So I had nothing else to do but be bold with colors. Beyond that, I think playing around with limited paintings, and that's again why Yoshi was given to me as an example to look to of just bold colors. They're all wonderful and exciting and popping. And so working with even copying color palettes of artists you admire that are using bold colors is a really good way to practically understand how to make them work.
And I just want to use Mark Bradford to illustrate this question from Shaim, which is that my problem with color when I was in art school is I made everything gray. I was like the opposite of Lauren. Like I could not do bright saturated colors. It's so hard for me. But my feeling is that if you think about it, when you paint, the more dirty your brushes get, the more cluttered your palette gets, the more the colors are getting muddier and muddier all the time. They don't get brighter. And so if you start too bright, I think it's easier to actually tone it down than to start gray and punch it up. I don't know. Do you think that's something that happens, Lauren, that stuff just naturally gets muddier and muddier? I don't know. Maybe this is just me.
I think that's pretty specific to oil paints, which is something that I think you did do in college. Because oil
paint. Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Yeah. Acrylic, you can always put something on top and it'll feel fresh and new. Whereas oils, that is true in the sense that the more you mix a color, it's never going to be as bright as the tube color that you put down or as pure as the tube color that you put down. So that's true for acrylic or for gouache or for anything else. Your mixed colors will never have that same level of pure saturation. But you can still work with these contextual things where if everything else on your palette is muddier and then you have one slightly less mixed thing, that will feel very, very bright. And I actually prefer, say, doing something like that where you can contextually make something bright versus actually using straight up tube paint or say fluorescent paint, which is another popular thing. You can make something look fluorescent, say a yellow fluorescent, if you just use a regular yellow, but make everything around it grays and blue grays.
So Alex, how about this painting by Mark Bradford? Because at first glance, people say, oh, it's a blue painting, but there's more than that going on here.
Yeah, like look at how the entire left side is purple. I look at those little spots of like the pinkish red throughout, and then the yellows all on the right side. And you quickly, it's really, really clever how this is an example of how like a quote unquote monochromatic painting can be anything but.
Mahika says, I read in James Gurney's book that colors rely on one another. They don't stand by themselves. I think that shows that color is subjective in terms of lighting and mood. One thing that Tony Janello told me, he's the one who really just got me to understand color because I was such a wreck before, but he used the analogy. He said that colors are like people. So you have to think about any grouping of colors is a different group of people. And the thing is, if you have a painting, say this Mark Bradford painting, all of a sudden somebody slapped on some cerulean blue, it's a different dynamic because if Alex, me, and Lauren are on the stream, and then all of a sudden Jordan comes on, it's a different dynamic. People are playing off of each other in a completely different way. So that's how you have to think about it, that it's not one at a time. It's like Alex relates to me, I relate to Lauren, and so forth. So don't ever think about it as a solo situation because it's definitely a group effort. Alex, how about this artist? This was your pick.
I am so excited to, Wiley Beckert's one of my favorite living artists, and especially for warm and cool, her work is exactly like the pieces we were just talking about with Bradford, where you look at this and you're like, oh, you get some warm colors going on here. But then you notice how cool the whole painting is. And like likewise with this one, like an alternate cover for Tasha's Cauldron, it comes off as very blue, but then you see the heart and little bits there spattered with flecks of warmth in there that does so much power to enhance it. And again, it's that great example of something that appears monochromatic, but is not.
Lauren, do you think if somebody wanted to sharpen their eye
to be able to really identify more subtle shifts of color, would you say they just need to look at more paintings, or should they do the white on white exercise? Because so much of this is just analyzing the colors.
It really is. I think that this is hard. I think everybody is different. Everybody learns differently. I learned a lot about color through reading about it. I knew a lot about intellectually, but it really took me putting together outfits that were different colors for me to understand how color worked. It wasn't actually through painting at all. That was like way above my skill level. But I think on top of that, one thing that can help is studying analogous color palettes where everything, as Alex has just pointed out here, is say within a gray range, and suddenly you're forced to pick out what is the blue thing, what is the red thing within everything that's all within one color. Or here, for instance, where everything's mostly brown and red. Where is the cool? Where is the warm? Where is the dark? Where is the light? That will really get you attuned.
I think the point, you guys, is that everybody has a different entry point for starting to see color. For me, it was painting from natural light. The second I switched to natural light, everything was so much easier for me to see because I was doing a lot of life painting and figure painting. But Lauren obviously did it through outfits. Alex, what was your entry point? Was it actually painting or looking, or?
That's a really funny question, because when Lauren said outfits, that's the first time I realized I did not start learning color from painting. I think I first learned it from decorating my room poorly, though it may be, but kind of what colors worked where, organizing DVD and bookshelves, not by alphabetical order, but by color. Those little things helped. Me and my college roommate organized our closets by Roy G. Biv.
Oh my God. I really dislike those people that put together bookshelves by Roy G. Biv, where they're all rainbow. It drives me nuts. But I do agree with this idea of tangible learning, where you can learn concepts by moving around the objects. I think that's very real. And probably we went through the same experience. For you, it was the moving of objects in your room. And for me, it was the moving of pieces of clothing on my body, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes I think actually interior space is a great way to think about color, because interior space is always affected dramatically by what kind of lights you have. If you have a halogen light, if you have fluorescent lights, it can really change the atmosphere, which is why Teresita Fernandez, who is a contemporary installation artist, is really great to look at. Because although a lot of these have bright saturated yellows in them, look at how the color of the wall changes your perception of how you look at the piece. Like, Alex, if this had white walls, how would we change how we look at the artwork? Oh, Alex, you're muted.
You're mute.
Oh, sorry. Alex, your mic's... Oh, there you are.
Yeah. Had an emergency. It was power cord or microphone. Yeah, it's so interesting looking at pieces of work in a museum and how much the lighting and the sense of the space can come into effect. Looking at these and how the room dictates how the light guides that color, it changes everything.
Yeah, I don't understand why museums and galleries are really insistent on the white cube, on the bleaching of the space. One of my favorite, I have a few favorite museums. I think, what's it? The Isabella Gardner Museum in Boston.
Oh, that's what, yes.
They do a really good job of having not just painted walls, but patterned walls, and making the art objects look really good on those patterned walls. I think that people consider white as this neutral ground, but as we've learned, white is a color. It's never a neutral ground.
And also, I've been too lazy to go out and get this, but typically in the painting streams, I should be using a gray palette, glass palette with a gray sheet of paper underneath it, because it drives me crazy to mix colors on a white palette because I don't feel that I'm truly seeing the color that well. All right, Alex, how about Scott Fisher?
Scott Fisher is another like illustrator and typically fantasy-based illustrator. I recently found out researching him, he's done some children's books, which I did not know about. but he's a great example of like very, let's say, obvious warm and cool color like combinations that work really effectively for the field he works in, which is typically book covers and comic book covers. And so it's not anything subtle. It's like that punching blue, the punching red. And he's an example of when that is effective. I mean, you need to get an image that like really catches you. Not something like Beckett that you can dive into and it's a beautiful painting you could stand in front of for hours, but something that will really pull your eye from the crowd.
So Lauren, I want to know, what's your take on this pink? What is it doing?
It's a cold pink against a cold green. And the pink, the contrast here, this contrast that I keep bringing up is really the important thing here. It's creating this question mark. Although this is a painting that's only going to really work on someone that's not colorblind, as we've talked about in previous streams, which is also an interesting thing to consider is who are your images made for? I guess generally most people are making their images for their own color vision and people that share that color vision. But you have to consider that the hierarchies between people, not just where you live, but also your biology is going to change what you consider to be a successful and logical painting color world.
There was one of my professors who was talking at the end of the semester, he was talking about his experience at art school. And he was in figure drawing, and one of his professors was like, yeah, your paintings are all really interesting. Why do you choose to paint the people green? He said, like, I don't. I'm painting them just the way they're... Because he was red-green colorblind. And it's funny, it worked. He would make beautiful paintings, but it was just like, yeah, the figures were green, some things were red. Like, it was just his way of seeing it, literally.
As long as you have a logic, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So Lauren, this is an artist who shows in New York City at DC Moore Gallery, and I just love the brushwork. The brushwork is so good. But I didn't know until you told me before the stream that he's from New Hampshire, and you really see New Hampshire in these paintings.
I do. Eric Aho is from New Hampshire, and whenever I look at them, I immediately think of the New Hampshire wilderness where there's tons of ice that's really built up, say, on the lake, or snow-covered firs. And these are very dramatic. I would say New Hampshire overall is perhaps less dramatic than this, but it certainly reminds me of many walks in the woods after 4 feet of snow have fallen and seeing people going ice fishing and cutting a giant square out of the ice. All of this has a very specific landscape memory for me because of the color and because of the way that the chunks of paint are painted or laid on the canvas.
So what I'm going to say, you guys, is if you're not as fashion inclined like me, you might just really look at this slideshow again, because we do have a link to the slideshow in the video description below, and just look at these, because I think oftentimes when we're looking at stuff online, we don't really look that hard, right? And so give yourself that assignment to like really break this down and say, is that a cool blue? Is that a warm yellow? Tell yourself in your head why. And I think just that one simple exercise can go a really long way. Now, we have many other streams on color. We have this color chart, which is a great exercise for seeing different shifts of gray. Saturation obviously plays a big part of this as well, and complementary colors. Art Prof has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And in a few minutes, Alex and Lauren will be hanging out in the Art Prof Discord in the post live streams channel. If you guys want to pick their brains more about color fashion and girl with a pearl earring and Colin Firth's terrible curly hairdo, which is just, oh, sacrilegious.
I mean, it worked for him in it.
No, it didn't. It did not work for him. Subscribe to our channel so you can continue to grow and develop as an artist. And I want to say thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters. And also, Jill, thank you so much for the last minute super sticker that you're putting in. We greatly appreciate everybody's support. You guys make it possible for people all over the world to learn and develop as an artist. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye.